So we have in attendance Alderman Frieders, Alderman Transier, Alderman Milchewski, and Alderman Tulis, and Chief Jensen.
The light was flashing on top of the police station.
Oh, it just says that the conditions are ripe for lightning. It's not that there's lightning, but it's ripe for lightning.
It has to be within a certain...
Yeah. It's been going off for 3 days.
Has it really?
Yeah.
Have they cleaned it?
I don't know.
Because the one at the river...
I'm fast learning to stay in my lane.
Yeah.
Like, Tim, what do you need? We'll take care of it. Okay, done.
Yeah, they have to go in and clean them.
Don't offer.
Yeah.
Walk away.
Yeah.
Well, since we don't have any citizens, I think we won't have any citizen comments.
I had that said earlier this week, too.
Minutes for correction and approval.
We're good.
Yeah, they look fine to me.
Thumbs up.
We all good?
Yep.
All right. New business. PS 2020-06, monthly report review.
All right. December and January's monthly report. Just going over some different things for December, and I'll go through January.
Yeah.
Just a couple of the highlights. You know, if you look at personnel from December of 18 and December of 19, we had 33 full-time staff, and we have 41 now, which is pretty awesome. You look at the December overtime hours worked, we're at about 115.25. That's not that we actually worked that, but because of the contract and the way things are laid out, you have super holidays. They get paid super holiday pay, part of their contract. So that's part of the reason those hours are so high. Benefit time used, you can look at November of 19 as compared to December of 19. We had 440. That's pretty typical, especially with, you know, right before the holidays. People are not going to take Christmas Day off because they want the pay, but they're going to take the day before and the day after off, which is, you know, that's their prerogative. The nice thing is we're staffed fully, so it's, you know, we're not having to hire overtime to fill. A bunch of different community events and different photos. Training and career development, it looks like for the month of December, we had 450 hours of training, which is in there, which I think is pretty good. I think January we're looking at 400 and some hours as well. So going to the traffic crash intersection or traffic crashes, it looks like our intersections, 84.6% of our crashes are intersection related. And we're seeing, again, the same types of intersections. Until we can get IDOT to do something about Bridge and 126, we're going to continue to see crashes there. The good thing is they're property damage only. They're very minor.
What are they doing there?
So you get somebody that's on 126 mm-hmm. wanting to take a right to go north on 47.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pulling up to where the stop line's at. They're looking south on 47. Mm-hmm. They can't see, so they pull up. And as they're pulling up, the car behind them is thinking they're going, so they rear-end them. That is majority of crashes at that intersection.
Now, there's an intersection in... It's off of 355 that has, like, it's an additional blinking light that says something, but it has two different lights, or lines.
Yeah.
So there's a line, a dotted line, and then a flasher that says... It says something that, if I was there, it would be intuitive, that it's a stop, a look, and then a move.
Right.
Not to... move forward? Is it like a signage issue?
I think it's a couple things. I think it's a sight line issue where you have that bank where that little mound is at.
It's kind of like this.
Yeah. The problem is you have a crosswalk, so the stop line has to be before the crosswalk. When we went out there, we had one of our officers, you know, he's like, we're getting a ton of crashes. I said, well, then let's figure it out. And we gave him the project to go up there and say, what can we come up with? What can we do? So Kyle Davis, really nice job. He goes through there. He's able to measure what your sight line distance is going to be behind the stop line. Then you cross the crosswalk. If you put another stop line past the crosswalk, you can see another 400 feet. So if you move the stop line up, the problem is you're past a crosswalk, which IDOT is not going to like. So
can't move a crosswalk.
Well,
there's a school.
It's a school right there. Then you're closer to the main Route 47. So we have presented the information to Eric. Eric has been presenting or has at least sent the information to IDOT. Whether or not IDOT's going to fix it or not, we don't know. And the way IDOT is, you guys know how difficult they can be to work with. So, you know, we're putting stuff out. Unfortunately, that's just an intersection that I'm not sure we can do much else with it. Now, they looked at taking some of the sightline issues out from that bank on that corner. Maybe that can help, but, you know, I'm kind of, at this point, I'm putting it in Eric's lane and trying to see if we can get Public Works to do something.
How are the crashes, or are there a lot at Van Emmon in 47?
No. No.
Because okay. You have no sight whatsoever.
No, not at all. But there's also a no turn on red there.
Yeah.
So I know it's signed that way. So
yeah.
The biggest intersections we have, actually Bridge and Van Emmon, we had two last month.
Okay. That's good to know.
So
that's a scary intersection.
It is. Yeah, with that bank right there and that sight line issue right there. I'm surprised we don't have more at Hydraulic.
That was my next one. Hydraulic actually is a little bit easier to see, believe it or not, than...
Yeah, you got to poke all the way around.
Yes, your front end is really close to getting in that lane out there. I'm surprised we don't have more there. But then, you know, the other intersection, the top two are Galena. Until 47 is widened, I mean, you know, the IDOT really came through when they pushed that stop line back, you know, so vehicles, somebody's could turn, but we're still having crashes.
Do we know what direction they're coming for those? Is it all coming south?
Crashes? I can't tell you. I don't know, Joe.
It's the people that are going east on Galena that have the least advantage.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming...
Yeah, I would agree.
Going west, there's a whole bunch of people turning left.
Yeah.
A couple people turning right. But if you're coming from the west, if one person is turning left, everybody who's going straight is trying to dodge.
Get around.
And when they go around and somebody's turning right to go west on the Galena, that's just a... Horrible,
it's a bad intersection. Yeah. That's one of the intersections that you're going to see probably as big as 34 and 47 when it's redone.
Yeah.
At least I would think.
Yeah.
That's just my thinking.
I also think once we have a right in, right out into Bristol Bay in a couple different spots, a lot of that traffic might be minimized because the majority of those, there's only one way to get into that freaking neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I remember right after they closed the sales center, the people that were cheating up those roads, they couldn't because they put the Jersey barriers there.
Yeah.
So it's like a simple, once it's alleviated to get into that neighborhood, I don't think we're going to see as much of a cluster at 47 Galena because with a right in, right out at Bristol Bay, and then what's the road? Wouldn't there be a right in, right out as you approach 47 on Galena too?
There could be.
Coming back. Into town?
Going west on Galena before you get to 47. I remember there was like, because that was supposed to be like the speedway. But if there's more than one way to get in that neighborhood,
there could be.
You lose a quarter.
And what we'll do, the only area is, you know, we have on our Facebook page now, and we've sent it out on our website. If somebody has a traffic complaint, here's a form, fill it out, and send it into us.
Yeah.
The only three we've ever heard of is 47, 34, and the stop sign at Van Emmon and Eustis. And we've been at that intersection a lot. You see the California stops, but we're not seeing any blatant stops. So we're still hitting it. 34, 47, we're hitting hard every day. To what you're talking about, the right in, right out, what you're going to see is a bunch of people try to take a quick left, heading south on 47, trying to bust a left so they don't want to go down to that light. We'll hit it really hard in there, you know, and especially when it's new. For the first 6 months, first 60 days, we won't write tickets. People, it's new. We're going to just let people know you can't do this, trying to be cordial, and go from there. And then after that, it's kind of Katie bar the door. The last 6 months, 7 of our officers have conducted over 4,000 traffic stops, 20% tickets, 80% written warnings. So if people are saying that they're seeing a lot of stops, I mean, they have one team that's doing 30, 40 stops a night, and it's pretty much our new officers, but they're not heavy-handed when they're writing tickets. They're not. So if anybody's complaining, let me know, and I'll talk to whoever you want, but... That's
my husband complimented you. I don't know. He goes, Jim's doing something good because there. I see more cops now than I ever saw. I said, well, we do have more too. But
that's awesome to hear.
That they're visible. That they're, you know.
So John Hunter, on New Year's Eve, they started their shift at 6 o'clock. And I love it that he did this. He said, we're going to stop cars. We're going to stop car after car after car about 6:30 on. Because when people are leaving to party, we want them to know that the cops are out there, right?
Yeah.
And they did. They hammered Now, they didn't write any tickets, which is fine with me.
Poor choice of words, Chief.
Well, yeah. Okay. They made a lot of traffic
stuff. They pile drive.
So, but that's awesome. We want people, as they drive through town, to see lights somewhere so they think the cops are everywhere. And, you know, when people...
But even, you know, you see them sitting more in different spots and watching traffic.
Good.
Slowing the trucks down on 47, that's for sure.
Yeah, we're trying. That's been insane.
Uh-huh. We're trying.
Just taking my daughter to a dance class, it's like... Yeah. Before it was, and like when they're in, like they're at YPAC, yeah. When you're in the building.
Oh yeah.
We're trying.
And then vibrating as much. So whatever you're doing south of downtown, okay. Slow them down. It's obviously working. So
we're going to continue.
Cool.
And so hopefully.
Because isn't one of our goals eventually to have a full-time traffic division where they're focusing on the speed of?
Yes. So. When we can get to where our authorized staff is 33, then I would look to pull two, keep our teams at five, sergeant plus four, keep our teams at five because that's the most important thing, and then take the additional staff we would have and make that a, as I forget the acronym that we were going to use, but more of a special enforcement unit. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily enforcement, special projects. If we know we have a speeding problem, they're going to deal with it. If we know we have a crime problem, they're going to develop plans for how we're going to deal with the BMVs that we're having in the subdivision. And so it's going to be two people that they're going to know when they come in. They're not going to have a set shift. They're going to work it based on what the problem is. So it's more of a targeted enforcement unit to deal with traffic, crime, things like that. We're going to utilize those people to work with the teams on days and nights and our criminal intelligence team, CPAT, CIT, to really hit an area hard. So we're going to try, we're hitting that area hard right by the Jewel now because when the weather gets nice, crime is going to pick up. It's going to spike. We're going to try to hit it hard. CIT has made 6 arrests in the last week and a half out there. And it's not been piddly stuff.
Where's that at?
So, it's the apartments there.
Right oh, by the River Run, or what is it called?
Kendall Marketplace.
Yeah.
But the apartments right by there.
Yeah, the townhomes right there. Right. They look really nice.
By the Planet Fitness?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's a lot of bad stuff in there. So we're trying to hit it hard now so that we have an impact before the nice weather comes through. So... Tuesday looks to be the busy day for crashes, at least for December. January, it's different, but our time frame is the same for both months, and that's roughly 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. So we're going to try to hit those areas hard, especially around that time. Yeah, it's right after school. When you really look at crime, if I go to part one and part two crimes, if we look at our totals for the year, we're minus 47 in part one crimes, which is fantastic. And we're minus 9 in part two crimes as compared to the previous year before, which, again, anytime you can have a lower number of crimes. Being down 47 crimes in part one, that's what drives our crime rate. I haven't figured out what our crime rate is. I know it was in the annual report. Off the top of my head, I don't know it. But with these numbers here, we're going to see a decrease in our crime rate, which, in my opinion, when you post that on your Facebook and you have businesses, you know, you're trying to bring economic development in, the lower the crime rate you have, the better. So total calls for service, the nice thing about having reduced part one and part two crimes, we had an increase of 996 calls or incidents that we call it. It's on here for calls for service, but it's really incidents. So we had an increase of 996. So, and then in December,
isn't that kind of a compliment to the trust?
To the
trust in the...
I think so. Well, I think a lot more of the incidents we have is we have a lot more staff now. So when you talk about having 8 new police officers, you're going to get, you know, every traffic stop they do, anything that they do on the radio is an incident. So you're going to see a huge increase because of the number of staffing that you have. But Yorkville hasn't stopped growing. Yorkville is still growing. It's not growing in huge amounts, but it's growing. But to see our crime rate go down with the growth in the community,
right.
But then you add officers and you see the increase, you know, to me, I look at that and say, yeah, that's pretty gosh darn good. You know, that says that, you know, the city's looking at, yeah, we're growing, our department's growing with it, and the guys are out there doing what it is we're paying them to do. Yeah. And obviously there are certain things that can change that. You know, some of it we have control over, some of it we don't. But
well, how do you explain November being more than twice the previous year?
Which one are we at here?
Calls for service. Still.
So the reason that November is that way is KenCom included what we would call our Z calls. So the way KenCom is set up is we get billed per incident, right? So if I say, you know, KenCom put me 10-6 busy, I'm going to lunch, they would create an incident for me, right? If I'm going to say I want to do foot patrol at Kendall Marketplace, they would create an incident for me. That month, we started to do Z calls where we are not calling out to KenCom. We're typing it on the computer that we are doing it. KenCom doesn't have to do anything, which means they can't bill us for that call. We get billed based on the number of incidents. So we're significantly reducing anywhere between 400 and 800 incidents per month by us doing it ourselves on the computer. Puts us out as busy, but KenCom's not having to take the time to enter the data for us, so they're not charging us for that incident. Does that make sense? What happened was it's November.
It's still tallied as an incident?
It is, however, we don't want it tallied in the overall incident calls that we have here. KenCom did for that month. Okay. They didn't know how to get rid of it. So the increase that you see there, it should be much, much less. Well, not much less, but it should be. It could be anywhere between 500 and 700 less. So that's the difference with what you have for that month.
Cool.
As far as January goes, again, there are several different things community-wise. Training hours, we had a total of 417 hours in January. Looks like our crashes, we were, again, 83.7% were intersection-related. Saturdays look to be the prime day, but the same time frame, you know, 2 o'clock. The intersections, again, actually the top one has changed. It was Bridge and Veterans Parkway, and the second one was the same as December, which is Bridge and Galena. So you can look at the directed patrol areas, Route 34, Route 47 in Eustis. So we're hitting a lot of areas, and that, you know, especially 34, 47, we're trying to hit that hard. As far as crime goes, you know, you can compare January of 19 as compared to January of 20. It looks like we're down from January of 19 as far as Part 1 crimes go, from 19 crimes in January to 11 in January of 2020. And we're they're the same with Part 2 crimes, 27 each. And then probably the biggest difference on the squad car stuff, you can look at gasoline expense. You're almost double what we spend on gasoline. A large part of the reason for that is staffing. We have more people on from January of 19 as compared to January of 20. And then the gallons of gasoline, you can see, have not quite doubled, but pretty close to it. So that's really the difference there.
Yeah, the price of gas has gone up.
And gas has gone up, yes.
It was $1.99 in January of
2019. Well, keep in mind that when we don't pay certain taxes, so we go through our WEX program. The WEX program is through the state of Illinois. It's a credit card through the state of Illinois. We're not paying certain taxes on that. So you may pay $1.249. We may be paying $1.99. It averages anywhere between 45 and 60 cents less per gallon that we would pay, which is pretty good. But the gas projections for 2020, not looking good.
Not good.
Yeah, it's not looking good. You're talking you could get up to $4 a gallon again multiple times.
Well, do we know if the coronavirus can be defeated with gunpowder? Just want to put that on the record.
That's all I have for that, Seaver.
No more questions. PS 2020-07, adjudication reports for December 2019 to February 2020.
Looking through the, there's a lot of, it looks like building and zoning, a lot of ordinance tickets from building and zoning that I've seen. We see a few traffic-related ones. You're still seeing some cannabis ones. A large, large majority of the cannabis tickets are underage kids. You know, they're in a car smoking it while they're driving. They get stopped. And we had some that have been in schools. I will tell you this, that the schools have just installed vape sensors in one of the bathrooms to try them out, and it's pretty amazing. I mean,
what's that look like?
I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I just heard about it yesterday.
It's really bad.
Well, I have too, because my son is over there.
From an employee.
Yes. So what happens is that I don't know how it all works. There's a lot of technical language, but somebody's vaping, and that sensor goes off, and it goes off like that to a computer. There's somebody there, and they're watching the camera. So they can't see inside the bathroom because you just can't do that. But as kids are walking out, they're pulling kids. So Goldsmith was out there yesterday, sees this kid milling around, sees a kid exchange something with a girl who goes in the girl's bathroom. Sensor goes off. She comes back out, hands it back to the boy. He finds the boy, or they get the boy out there. He's got brass knuckles on him and a knife and a vape pen.
So that's the one from WSBY today?
Correct. Yeah. So that's some of the things that schools are starting to go to. They're starting to put this vape stuff. I mean, it is. It's bad.
The kids are still free to smoke cigarettes in the bathroom.
Actually, no, the vape dissipates. There's kids that walk down the hallway. Teachers are on everywhere. They'll blow it out, and it's gone in a matter of, like that.
Well, I heard they're smoking it. They wear hoodies, and they have it in their sleeves.
Yeah, they blow it right in their sleeves. Yeah. They'll do it in class.
Is it tobacco or is it cannabis vape?
Yeah. This here, this sensor, will do tobacco. They'll do any vape, including THC.
Okay, but what are the majority of them are
they've
tobacco?
Done both. They've done both.
Really? Yeah. In high school?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dab pen.
This kid's got gall.
Take some stones.
Wow. So, nothing as far as any other citations, ordinance violations. We are, again, it's pretty much what.
What does dangerous, vicious domestic animal normally turn out to be?
Dog that attacks another dog or a human being. So
a couple kind of high profile.
Is it more than just a nuisance? A dog running loose, or
yes.
it's
for tough. a dog to be declared vicious, they have to have done more than just bark at someone. It's biting.
Okay, it was just a question.
No, that's a great question.
I didn't understand it totally. What it?
Yeah. So, and was it Plainfield a month ago? They had a pit bull that actually killed the owner. Yeah. It was. So the pit bull was in the house. It was a domestic between husband and wife. Husband yelled, and the dog went after the husband and killed him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So. So, when you talk like vicious, it's dogs that are barking, not just barking, but it's dogs that have attacked another animal or another human being. And it's not just one time, it's more than one.
Just curious.
Those are the tough ones.
If they do it enough, the state's attorney's office can put it down.
George, yeah. Not Frank. And you love Frank.
That's it for that, unless anybody has any questions.
Don't mess with her.
Any questions?
Yeah. What do you do when a kid gets busted for vaping outside of the fine?
So the school district will have the discipline through the school. We will write an ordinance violation ticket or an ordinance ticket, basically. And they would come here and they pay the fine and go on their merry way. So the school district will, they'll confiscate, obviously, and then there's discipline through the school.
Yeah, because I'm learning more and more that a ticket's one thing. And if, let's just say, the person who receives the ticket is relatively poor, that ticket could end up being, it's a $300 violation, but it could have long-term $50,000, $100,000 implications. But the idea is, how do you make an impact on the kid who is doing something that's obviously detrimental to
health? They probably get it out of school.
Is there...
Depends. I don't know.
If you got a kid who, pickpockets twice or steals twice, something under $50, you want to make sure that they are aware of the implications of their behavior.
Yes.
So, I mean, if it's something that's school board related and that, it's discipline within the school, that's going to negatively impact the community if it keeps happening.
Correct.
So, all right, well, how do you remedy?
So one of the things that we've tried to do that Ryan Goldsmith has been trying to work with is, obviously, do you double consequence a kid?
Right.
And there are certain cases where, it needs to be done because the kid is just not getting it.
Yeah.
Part of the issue that we're running into is the parents. The parents are not, they don't see a problem with it. And, when, at least in our mind, my mind, when a parent doesn't see a problem with it in a school, the only way to to do it is to say, okay, school, you're going to do what you're going to do. We're separate, but I'm going to write you a ticket for it. And, you know, I can't put you in jail for it. You're not going to have a criminal record for it. But at some point, monetary will hopefully change the behavior. If they know they get caught, it's going to cost them this. Some kids I think it works with. Some kids maybe not. Some kids just don't care. Frankly, I think there's more parents that don't care. So.
Got it.
Wish I had a great answer for that one, but
you don't have a good answer.
No.
Well,
that's all right. Moving on down. PS 2020-08, COPS hiring grant.
This is just informational. We did submit a grant for a COPS grant for staffing. This grant is a grant that is through the Department of Justice. It would pay, it's a 3-year contract. They would reimburse up to $125,000 total. We have to do this. There's different programs, so to speak. The program that we wrote this under is under the school umbrella. So we would, if we were allowed this grant, I put in for one. If we were allowed and received this grant, we would make a junior high school resource officer position.
That's cool.
That would be funded $125,000. So over the 3-year period, Rob worked out the numbers. It's just over $418,000 for 3 years, and that's everything. That's salary, benefits, mm-hmm. everything in there. We would be reimbursed $125,000 for that. So, who knows? We'll see. It's not, the grant's not due till mid March. They'll probably wait till June or July before they award it, and then if we're lucky enough to get the award, then
cool.
Figure out what we're going to do.
Certainly would help.
So we are also, on that, it's a different topic, but kind of the same overall, where I'm working with the school district right now for a school violence prevention program grant, where in the school district, it's for school-related stuff, but it has to be applied for, the way I read it, it has to be applied for through the local law enforcement. So we're partnering with the school district to, as of right now, the number could vary between 300,000 and 500,000 cameras in schools, early warning system, notification system to parents, that type of thing. We're trying to finalize exactly what the school district's really wanting, but it's a way of hopefully making our schools a little bit safer. So we've thrown out a bunch of different ideas. Hardening the target when they can't just walk in the front door into the office, you know, putting in buzzers, cameras, things like that. But it's a way of...
At Circle Center, if you get it, could you put a buzzer so they can't get... You have to buzz them out of the office so those secretaries are safe.
Done deal?
I asked for that many years ago and it never got done.
Those are all things that's actually some of what we talked about is buzzers to get in. Even mm-hmm. once you're in the office, to even get into the rest of the school.
To buzz them into the school.
Right.
Yeah, I attended a Kiwanis meeting over here at the high school.
Yeah.
And it was like 6:45 in the morning. I walked in a back door, went to the officer, tattoos, knife, bald dude, beard, nobody freaking said anything to me. So I wrote an email to Tim Shim saying, just so you know, a bald tattooed guy with a beard with a knife, because I carry a pocket knife because I have to open up boxes all the time, walked right into your school and nobody said anything to me. And the cop that I waved at did not know me.
Was it a Yorkville cop?
Yeah.
All right, that's a problem with that.
You weren't the chief, though, but still.
Okay.
I walked in, and nobody stopped me. No badge on me, nothing. Because the meeting was so early that whatever.
Right.
There was one door that was open. It was in between the... It wasn't over here where the new library is, but it was, like, over here.
Right.
Walked right in. And I was angry. Why am I allowed in this building?
Yeah.
Stop me. Make me go in the front door. And yes. Every school that I've been to, like, I've spoken at maybe 36 schools in the last 3 years...
Yeah.
Every single one of them scans my driver's license,
yep.
mm-hmm. puts a freaking sticker on me, even yep. my kid's grade school.
Yep.
That's what mm-hmm. I expect. That's what I want. Even
I'm in
the
uniform, and they do that to me over here.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, now they should, because the emails that I've sent saying, come on, don't let bald, tattooed, bearded guys into your freaking building without a freaking badge on. That makes me angry.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, because you could have went.
I do not disagree.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we are doing, and we're working closely with the school district, the new security officers over there, Scott Brosi and Joe Grimaldi, is anything security related. So there will be times when he'll be in plain clothes and we will try to get in that school, and there are certain security checks that, you know, they're going to be doing certain security drills that they're hired to do, but we'll be working with them to make sure that the schools are safer to do that.
Even in the summer when they got camps over there, I walked into a wrestling camp. How did I get in?
That school is open. You're right.
Like, one of my biggest fears is that in the off hours, something will happen. And it's like, oh, well, we don't have a protocol for that.
Yeah.
No. Well, and you know, like at Circle, I don't know if they're still using it, but they would hit the park. We use it for
park. Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so what takes somebody, I mean, the main circles are locked down, but there's, you never know.
Yeah.
Somebody could find a way to stay in the building.
Absolutely.
Since we're on the subject of school policing, kind of.
Absolutely.
One of my daughters just joined the lunchroom. Policing staff, I guess.
That's high
good. And she had some good words for Officer Mott.
Good.
How she handled a very unruly student that they've been having a lot of trouble with the last couple.
Is she at the middle school or high school?
At middle school, I think.
Okay. Yeah, we had one of the girls that we've dealt with.
Well, she had some very good words to say about the officer and how she handled the particular students. So I just passed that on.
Stacy's awesome.
I love Stacy.
Stacy's retired. Her last day is June 6th.
Stacy Mott.
She's retiring.
Yeah. She's awesome. Don't Stacy.
She's retiring?
Yeah.
She told me at the election she was coming off her retirement.
That's not fair. You can be 26 years old and retire?
Yeah.
You know the right people.
She's awesome.
She is.
She's my friend.
We
think
moved
she's
in.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thomas called 911 by accident.
Moving right along. PS 2020-09, Strategic National Stockpile Plan.
Yes. So the SNS plan is something that Yorkville, I can't find that we've ever had. I'm hoping if you knew we've had it, you'd be able to tell me.
I mean, you're lying. I can't find heard it. Of it.
So in essence, what this is a plan that if there is a, like H1N1 many years ago when they talked, or even coronavirus, there's to the point where they are going to want to be dispensing mass quantities of either PPE, personal protective equipment, or vaccinations, whatever it may be. The state and the federal government, they have a plan called the Strategic National Stockpile. So all this stuff is held in different areas throughout the United States. In our area, it's held in Springfield. The county would have to go down to Springfield, gather what it is they would need, bring it back and secure here, and then every municipality in Kendall County would have to go and pick up their quantities for their cities. And then we have to have the plan in place of, if we were going to dispense it, how are we going to dispense it? Where are we going to dispense it? What's our plan? So Ray is currently working on the plan for a strategic national stockpile. The health department has contracts with all the schools in the county. The school would probably be that location. We can accommodate parking. We can accommodate traffic plans. If you had a mass type thing, it'd be really difficult. But that's part of the reason we're involved in it. So Ray is working on the plan, and we're involved with, obviously, with maps inside the school, where we need security, where do we need parking, what kind of, do we need barricades, do we need cones, what's our quantity that we're going to need, what's our 12-hour staffing rotation, what's our 12-hour plan, how many people do I need in a 12-hour period, and if I'm going to run 3 or 4 12-hour operational periods, you know, it's, we've got to have that in place. It's not just, hey, make a couple phone calls to get a couple guys in. You need all hands on deck. So we're preparing this plan, hopefully never to ever use it, but it's something we need to have in place.
If they ever had a plan, it would have been after 9/11. Because that's when they came, was it NIMS training?
NIMS
we all
training.
Had to do NIMS training.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody,
I'm getting ready to send out an email to all the elected officials about NIMS training.
I don't think anybody's NIMS trained.
Love.
But me. On the council.
Yeah.
And that isn't so. It's not any good because...
Yeah.
That's how many years ago?
So all the department heads in the city and then all of our staff in the city, they have until June or July to complete certain classes, you know, the National Incident Management System classes, 700, 800, 100. There are certain levels, like Bart needs to have it all, I have to have it all, Ray and Bear need to have it all, Eric has to, Bonnie, there are certain classes she has to have. And we're working on that right now. So I've got a good list, but they have until mid-year to get all that done. There'll be an email coming out to you guys to say it is recommended. It's not saying you have to, but it is recommended through NIMS that you complete, you know, two of the classes. Because there's going to be certain responsibility if, God forbid, the big one hits. And, you know, we're going to need to know how to work through things.
Oh, look at Nashville.
Yeah, Coal City. I wrote the tornado in Coal City, and it was brutal. It was
a very informative thing. I mean, it made you think, like, even, you know, what if a truck is going down, falling, whatever.
And we have that.
Has a crash. Yeah. And how are you going to get people through town if it's blocking 47?
Yeah. We have that in this town. There's a lot of stuff that comes on these railroad tracks in town. Stuff that we never know of.
Yeah. You know, well, that you'll never know. Truck traffic. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. So that's it for that.
All right. PS 2020-09 Strategic National. Oh, I just did that. I didn't make my mark.
All good.
PS 2020-10 Emergency Pipeline Plan.
Yes. So again, this is another plan that I can't find that we had. We have a couple pipelines that run through Yorkville. If there's a major pipeline that is hit, a petroleum pipeline, a gas pipeline can create major issues. We just sent Ray to Paradigm Pipeline something. And it was basically a training to understand, you know, this is what we are, this is what we need to do. Here are kind of preset things that you need to do if you have a pipeline emergency in your community. It provides the contact information for the few pipelines that we have broken down by county, so we can tell in Yorkville what pipelines are running in Yorkville, who we would call, what you need to do if we had a major gas line or you know, natural gas line hit.
We had one by 47.
Yep, we do.
Right, by Circle Center.
Yep. And so the purpose of this, it's going to probably be a 1 or 2 page plan. It's not going to be a lot, but when you have a sergeant on duty that's going to say, we had a pipeline hit, I don't know what to do, he's going to be able to pull this plan out, and he's going to be able, he or she is going to be able to say, all right, here's who we need to call, this is what we need to do. It's really more of a fire emergency than it is a police, but we're going to be staffed with evacuating. We're going to be staffed with traffic control. So it's, again, it's part of being prepared, which is what our job is.
Yeah, cool.
So that's that.
Questions?
No. Glad you're doing it.
Old business.
We'll see. Fleet status. So over the last several months, we've talked a couple times on Enterprise. And I, in conversations with John and in conversations with Bart, we've kind of, the biggest issue we were having is obviously always trying to fund vehicles. It's a huge thing. Public Works, every department needs vehicles. It always seems that way. Next to personnel, it's your guys' biggest headache. So we researched the option of Enterprise leasing and whether or not it's feasible to do, and or is it something that the city can do? Can we be our own Enterprise type of thing? So going through our study, we've looked to, our fleet was currently, or when I started, was 23 vehicles. Not all 23 vehicles were operational. We are bringing our fleet down to 20 and eventually to 19. So we're going to get rid of the two vehicles that are not very good, or that are running, but that cost us a lot of money to run. We're going to try to be more efficient with our fleet with as far as the overall numbers go. If I can cut numbers, obviously it's going to cut costs for maintenance. It's going to cut insurance costs, going to cut gasoline costs. And then we are going to try to do a rotation with our fleet of what we would call the hot seat program. So we would have 10 first-line patrol vehicles. These vehicles would be out. Five of them would be out at one time if we're fully staffed in the street. That way we have five remaining. But if we have six people or seven people working, or we have other details, or cars are in the shop, we have other vehicles that we can go with. Those vehicles will run either some 12 hours in a row, some 24 hours in a row, with the ultimate goal of trying to replace vehicles every 4 to 5 years, which is really what the Enterprise lease program is.
Right.
If we did this program, the cost of the Enterprise lease works out to be about $3,000 more than what it would cost us to do it ourselves over the course of the 4-year period of time. Now, the difference lies next year, and I'm not sure if you guys have seen the budget or not, And I made sure John was okay with me bringing it up because I don't want to step out of my place. And he was. So next year in the budget, he's proposing $150,000 in there for vehicles for next year. That would fund just short of three squad cars. Mm-hmm. If we were to replace, let's just say, two of them this next year, and we were to lease it, we're going to pay that for a straight four-year period of time, whatever that amount is. We're going to pay that same amount for 4 years. Where we make up that $3,000 difference is, next year, I may not need to buy a light bar. I'm not going to need a radio. I'm not going to need radar, which means I can bring that cost of what $64,000 fully equipped squad car would be maybe down to $55,000.
Yeah.
Right? So in one squad car, I can make up that $3,000. When you talk about enterprise and whether it's a good program to have, is it going to save us time on the other end? Yes and no. When you go to sell the cars, yeah, it'd be nice to be able to take a car right to enterprise and let them deal with it. But we pay a fee for that. So that fee is included in that price. How that transition is going to go between taking a vehicle that we're leasing through enterprise and then transferring that equipment out to a new vehicle, I don't know how that's going to go. So our thought process was to not do the enterprise lease program. I think we can save money not doing it. I think it will be cheaper, so long as we're diligent. We're already very good at identifying vehicles, purchasing vehicles with the equipment we want in it. We know what that equipment is. So I think we're going to be very good, and it's going to be easier doing that on our own than it would be to enterprise. But on the other side of it, we're not strapped for four straight years having to pay the same amount of money,
yeah.
You know, and so over the course of, you know, it's, you know, two vehicles, you know, it's $64,000 each. If we budget $150,000, I may not buy three vehicles with it. I may maintain the remaining part of that $150,000 after I purchase two cars. Let's say it's $30,000 remaining in there. I would keep it in that account. The following year, maybe we get $130,000, and any extra I can save by not buying equipment, I know I have $30,000 extra. Now I can reallocate that and buy three cars instead of two. The other side of it is I always want to try to have a balance in that account where it's inevitable. A squad's going to get totaled. And because we're running lean with our numbers, because we're trying to be efficient with that, I can't go without a squad car. This way, I have the money. I don't have to come to you guys and say, guys, I need the money. This is where we're at. You guys then have to stress over that, and I don't want to take something away from another department. So I want to try to be very responsible with that money we have, and save here, spend here, save a little bit here, maybe save a little bit here, here, and here, and then spend maybe, you know, every third year I'm buying three cars instead of two. With that operation, I can rotate cars on my entire patrol fleet every 4 years, which is no different than enterprise. So that's our thinking.
So is the thinking also the fact that you kind of have control of the asset? Meaning that it depreciates, we take that depreciation. When it's done with, you don't have to get rid of it at the end of that lease. You can make it an admin car.
Correct.
You know, we sell things all the freaking time.
Yep.
You know, for pennies on the dollar. But that also means that you could, in essence, do what we have been doing, which is driving cars fully into the ground.
Yes.
Not necessarily like, you know, patrol cars, but we're taking them out of service and putting them as a detective or a,
yes,
you know, for lack of a better term, the intern car.
Yes.
But
ultimately, the goal, Joe, would be our admin cars right now and detective cars are terrible. You know, there's the one Larry Hilt had that was a seizure. It's bad.
Yeah.
But as we rotate vehicles out of the fleet, detectives will get those. Our admin cars, like my car, Bear's car, Ray's car, they're good cars. They'll last us 5 to 7 more years. But the ultimate plan is when my car's done, I'm going to take an old squad car. I want the fleet to be the top-notch fleet because that's what people see, number one. That's what they're in. That's their office every day. I can take a squad car with 100,000 miles on it and not beat it to death and have very little maintenance, hopefully.
Yeah.
But when they're driven a lot, that's when the maintenance costs shy up. So to what you're trying to say, I think, Joel, is patrol will have first line, admin detectives will have secondary vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall goal of starting the conversation on this type of lease program was to make sure that the core of our fleet was constantly updated, yep. We weren't worried about technology lagging behind, and that we weren't worried about service being, oh, crap, it's $20,000 instead of a $4,000 whatever replacement.
Yeah.
But also understanding that our numbers are the way that they are is that we have things that kind of, it's almost like the life cycle of a bee. You're this for a few months, you're this for a few months, you're this for a few months. Make it years, but when we're talking about, it, say we had a department of 40, where you had 30 cars on the road or 25 cars on the road. If there was a lease-to-own program that basically ensured that those cars that are like the ones that run for like 4 weeks at a time, those cars are being cycled out while also retained as an asset internally.
Yes.
That's just not a reality just yet. I mean, like when we're talking about fleet, like from my wife's work perspective, you know, they have these, you know, not recycling programs, but basically they hit a certain number of engine hours and they get banked back down to go through a certain type of service. And then the newer ones kind of replace those. If we had that large of a fleet, it'd be a little bit different. But from my understanding, we don't deal with a fleet. We're dealing with more of like a bank of cars that it's not a consistent use. Most of them, because of the technology within them, have to run 24 hours a day, sometimes up to a week at a time. It's understanding that we're limited by our size and that we can't invest in this thing so fully that we would be okay with not having the car at the tail end of its life.
Yeah.
But that's the type of... You need to be able to dissect that information and make a proper decision, because if you look at the same type of aspect of this lease program on public works, if we just applied it to plows, imagine not owning a plow and only spending $8,000 a month on a plow 7 months out of the year. But then every 3 years, the engine swapped out, the shovel's replaced, there is no hole in the freaking bed. Like, that's an investment that, okay, we don't need the asset because the asset itself costs $250,000 to $350,000.
Right.
It's a little bit different. So the reason why I was so gung-ho about going through this exercise is to make sure that we're not missing something. Because what if there is a replacement program at year 4?
Yep.
Where there is a market for those cars that have been running for 4 months.
Right.
You know, 7 months out of the year, 4 weeks at a time. I mean, that's the stuff that you don't know if you don't know.
Right.
So one of the reasons why I was more gung-ho on this than the public works one is that I'm sick of saying no to buying new police cars. Because also understand that, like, you know, you bring up Larry Hill. Perfect example. That size, he was 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah.
He should not be stepping up out of a vehicle. He should be stepping down out of a chariot, a Tahoe. Well, also understand the limitations of the Tahoe. The only ones we can really get for a decent price are two-wheel drive front, you know, and they're cloth seats. I mean, like, I understand the limitations. And they're all small and, like, annoyingly, like, piddly. Oh, we can replace that. No. We have a state buying program. So my goal with this whole thing is, well, what are we doing wrong? What are we missing? We're not missing anything. The only thing that sucks is the fact that our budget date is May 1. If our budget date was February 1, we would be in line to get those four crossovers and not have to suffer through this. Well, we have to wait 3 months to get an, oh, now they're not making Impalas.
So Monday, our new Ford went to Minor. We got it. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Is it the Commander?
Ford Explorer.
Explorer. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Ford Explorer Interceptor model. Mm-hmm. Biggest guy we had in the department. We had a cookout after our jump the other day in the water. And biggest guy in the car sat in it. Where right now he's like lifting himself out.
Yeah, yeah.
This one here, ton of room. It's a beautiful looking car. Chevys are notorious for transmission problems, front end problems. We're seeing it. We're dealing with it in our fleet right now. When we go to do this, you know, if we can get two cars next year, we're going to have three Fords. We're going to pull two additional Chevys out of the fleet, the worst cars that we have, and put them into, you know, the school role, admin role. The other nice thing about this, Joel, is when we could decide next week, we're going to do Enterprise. We're not bound with Enterprise, mm-hmm. you know, to say we can only do it at you know, May 1st, right? We could decide 2 weeks from now, you know what? We had a change of heart. We're going to do it.
It's a
3-year program?
This one here is a 4-year program. Yeah. So the problem, and that's the biggest issue you run into. If we can fund it as a city where we do $130,000 to $150,000 a year, it makes sense for us to do it.
Right.
Where you're not locked in. So maybe the second year of the contract, the economy, we're having a hard time in the economy. The state's swept our motor fuel tax money, whatever it may be, and we just can't pay the $150,000 that Enterprise is wanting us to pay in the year. But we could pay $130,000. You know, so it's if we can fund it and commit to it, this is the way to go, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
If we don't know if we can stay to that funding level, well, then maybe Enterprise is that way to go. But I know talking to you guys, you know, you guys see that, and I know John is committed to that in the conversations we've had as well.
So he's committing 100?
150.
And that's more than double what we've been talking about, right? We've been between 60 and 80?
I don't know. I know 64 is what a new car costs fully equipped. Now, the next two cars, I don't need fully equipped. I have equipment.
Right.
You know, and KenCom's buying our radios.
And then the equipment, that was my big, why would we, because you have your car technology, you have your light technology, you have your computer technology, you have your radio technology. When I first got elected, the computer technology was you could only dump data when you were in the garage. Now, and you had to physically remove the computer and bank it. Now you can pull in and wirelessly transfer that stuff.
Yes.
Like my whole thing was every time we buy freaking equipment, we are 2 years behind because by the time we can afford the new stuff, it's already outdated.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm all right. Well, if the car isn't the expense that we're worried about, it's budgeted, it's not an investment, it's expense. Maybe we can just invest. And that was part of the reason why we talked about the lease program. Because if the car is the constant, that's what gets you from A to B. But your communication's another expense, your communication's another expense, and you got the painting, you got the light bar, whatever. Yep. Some of them are static charges. Like, yep. They are right when you get it, and that's it. But these computers, man, like...
Yeah. The computers and the in-car video cameras are probably the two most important things that will change the most often.
Yeah.
Light bar, it's not changing. Technology's not changing. Now, maybe after 3 squad rotations, yeah, I may get some technology change in a light bar, and after 3 squads, it's probably good to get a new one. But radios, they're not changing technology.
Yeah.
And the greatest part is KenCom's paying for all our radios now. I don't know if you guys knew that, but they're paying for our portables, and we will be getting, even though Yorkville and Oswego, we bought our radios before, like last year, we spent, Yorkville spent $28,000 to $30,000.
Yeah.
We are going to get that back from KenCom.
And is that because we consolidated and gave them control of that one number and fixed that one radio wave and all the other
stuff? No, when we sit on the finance committee, one of the things that, you know, we're noticing, and I have to be very careful with how I say it, when we are looking at the overall budget, we're not having issues with the budget. But we all know cities and the county, there's financial issues going on, you know, trying to fund things. So it was our opinion that it's all of our money's anyway. So let's reallocate that money back to the cities so that the cities now don't have to, I don't have to spend $600 per license for digital and then another license for encryption for 30 portable radios. Now the city doesn't have to eat that. KenCom is going to buy radios and the licensing. And the following year, they're going to do mobiles plus the licensing. So now, because we've kind of worked through that, and that was Dwight, Jeff, Larry Nelson, and myself sitting in finance working it through, this is how we can retain some of that money that we are paying into KenCom anyway. So that's going to be a huge cost. You know, a portable radio is $600. A mobile radio, I'm saving almost $1,000, and then the licensing on top of that. So
are we paying more per month, per quarter, per year with KenCom to lower that overall expense for the radios, or is it kind of like a wash?
It's a wash. KenCom has done a very nice job managing their money, and without wanting to create too big of a surplus, they're putting it back into the agencies.
So we'll all have consistent technology as far as communications?
We'll all have the same radios. We will all have P5, will now be a digital platform. and P5 will also be encrypted. So when we had, P7, I think, will be encrypted. Got to think about that one. So when we have a major emergency, we can go over to the encrypted channel, the scanner land. They're not hearing what we're doing. They're not being able to put out anybody who has a radio and a scanner, not be able to hear us communicating, saying we're going in door two. So this is big. And the nice thing about, the other thing about KenCom that we're trying to do this year, and it's one of the goals of the city council, would be for technology purposes. KenCom last year had a decrease in their health insurance, and they didn't spend all their overtime. So the extra they have in their budget, we are getting, our bill is not going to be what we thought it was going to be. So without going back to you guys to say, hey, I'm looking to get 30 grand so I can do e-citation, I can take what was originally budgeted, reallocate that money, get our e-citation, increase our technology, which will in turn save roughly 3 minutes per ticket in a squad car, plus 5 to 8 minutes per records clerk per ticket entry, because everything is all downloaded in it. And the building and zoning department can take advantage of that as well. So we're able to reallocate what we were going to have to pay. KenCom's going to charge us less, but we can take that difference, which we already had budgeted, and reallocate it to that. So that's the goal with it. So
you're not going to build a $40 million police palace, are you?
30. No. I've already been told multiple times.
Oh, that's horrible.
So that's it.
I just want to thank you for allowing me to tag along the other day.
It was good having you there.
The health department, it was nice to see that there are things being done at the local level to deal with, you know, with this health crisis.
Paul Tokars is amazing.
She is
absolutely amazing. So just so you guys, Siever and I went to a coronavirus kind of an update, how the county's handling, where we're at. She's been meeting with different officials, different cities. She met with all the chiefs, and that's the meeting Siever went to with me. The issue we're running into is, how are we going to handle forced containment? And somebody refuses to stay, how are we going to handle that? Then they batter one of us. Are we taking them to a county jail?
To spread it.
So there's a lot of issues that we as departments are going to have to work through with the state's attorney's office. The state's attorney, unfortunately, wasn't at the meeting, so we really didn't get a lot of direction, you know, just because he wasn't there and he had other things going. But those are all things that we really need to think of. And if we get one of our officers who has to fight with Jim Jensen, and I have the coronavirus, now that officer comes back to the PD, is he infecting my staff, the entire staff? And if you got the entire staff over there, and now you have City Hall infected, who's running law enforcement?
Even realize that these issues exist.
I mean, it is one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to a big thing. And so we're trying to work through a lot of things. A mall has been just absolutely amazing. And I don't know if, and she said this, I don't know, nobody realizes that we have forced, I call it containment,
quarantines
every year. But all of them, they talk the people into voluntarily staying inside the house. And that's obviously what our ultimate goal would be here as well.
How do you... laying out
how the virus can spread, how the disease can spread, how it can hurt other people, how important it is for them to maintain their health throughout this process and not getting it out there. I mean, Amal and her staff are very, very good when it comes to communicating with people in that respect, to understand the global impact. Not global, but the impact that it could create.
So is there a, outside of a declaration of instruction for locals, is there like a recommendation from the Kendall County Health Department, the Yorkville Police Department?
Not yet.
It's weird.
Well, let's just hope it doesn't get here.
No, I'm hoping so too. But we're going to develop it.
Yeah.
We're going to have to develop a response to exactly your question, Joel.
Okay.
We're going to have to.
We'll just don't screw it up. Okay.
Well, I'm trying. I told Bertner we're going to take, and if anybody's sick, we're going to take everybody to that $30 million police facility. They can all go over there.
Yeah, the HVAC in that place is top notch.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I'd build one here if you'd let me.
Nope.
Just saying.
Not for $30 million.
Nothing. We don't need $30 million. We definitely don't need that.
I hear it's a very ugly building.
It is not an ugly building.
It's gorgeous.
Not outside.
No,
the glass is the purpose for the glass is everybody loves fire. They hate police. They can see in. It's transparent. But there's ballistic capability in the lower sections of the glass to protect. The stone on that building is the same stone as the fire station. The brick on the building is the same brick on the fire station. So we did that on purpose, but we wanted, when we built it, we wanted the transparency. That's what we wanted people to see, that we're transparent with how we, why we designed it and how we did it. That's why it's like that.
I haven't driven by, so I'm just...
It's pretty cool. It's we'll give you a tour if you want.
It is like... It's that was the first time I ever went through a police station and went. Because I remember after Aurora opened theirs, I was like, and I walked in the bar, and I was like, this is not a good use of money. And there were already, you know, leaks in the elevator and issues, whatever. But I knew that they needed it. They deserved it. They were working out of that small station on 31. But no, Oswego's, they're not just investing in Oswego. Like, they're actually investing in becoming a center to, like, it's almost like you're building a classroom to hold classes that other people pay for to help you keep the lights on. And it's, like, it's a brilliant use of space. And the fact that nobody realized that's the center of what Oswego is going to be. Like, Oswego builds around, like, oh, it's on the outskirts. No, actually, if you look at the plan, that's the center of town. So.
The design, there, everything in that building was designed for a purpose. So when you come in the back employee entrance, I don't know if you remember me telling this, because I remember walking you around.
Yeah, yeah.
The back employee entrance, our officers spend over half their life in that building. You have a beautiful entrance for the public. Why don't you want to treat your employees who spent half their life in that building? So the reason we have that, with it's open and just really beautiful with the glass, and we didn't spend a ton of extra, but we're telling our staff we care about them. And that's why that was designed that way. How the break room is set with the main floor to upstairs. Whenever you get a big building, you always have separation. This way here, you don't have separation because you're literally right there and you can see and hear everything. So it was an amazing project. We don't need $30 million here, but when you talk about the design, why they did what they did, why they designed it, it's really cool. And the expansion capability of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's empty space inside the building that if there are more females hired, you open one door, it's already finished, you can add lockers. And you don't have to worry about adding on. It's already inside. It was already covered anyway. It was drywall. So,
I mean, even Montgomery's police department was well thought. I mean, their evidence room, where they have like these rolling cabinets where it just kind of moves, and like their range and the way that they approach that, I mean, they put it in a perfect spot. I mean, where's their highest traffic?
Yeah.
30 and freaking Orchard. It's right where it is.
So Dwight and I talked yesterday. We're looking to... If we can make this happen with the joint, we will share records, evidence, lobby, community room, locker room, defensive tactics room. We'll share all of it.
Holding? We'll actually have our own holding?
No. The jail, we would use there anyway.
Well, not in jail, but I mean, like, what do you call when somebody's there for a couple hours?
Jail.
Okay.
Holding. Yeah, I mean, they're holding.
Like, there's prison, there's jail, and there's like, oh, it's just kind of sober up or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, we would still utilize the same way we do that now.
Yeah.
But instead of building two separate, I mean, when you can combine that and it's one cost instead of two, it's exciting what it could be.
Yeah.
You just got to make sure we get the right
jealous
price. So
adjourned.
All right.
Thank you.